Right, well, good morning, everyone. When we go through hard times, it can be easy to get discouraged and feel that we don't have the strength to carry on. Unfortunately, we hear of people suffering from depression and self-harm and even committing suicide, even within our denomination. When, for whatever personal reason, people feel that they just can't carry on. Suicide is a very extreme response. However, many people, maybe even people in this room, get tired and weary as we struggle with personal issues such as health and money and relationships and many other things, which I won't try to list them because guaranteed I'll miss things out. We heard even today of people with illnesses and sicknesses who are not here with us today. Is it okay? Is it okay to struggle with life's issues? Well, the answer to that is yes and no. We shouldn't feel bad about struggling. We're only human, after all. In a church context, we should feel safe enough to ask for help when we need it. Today, what I'm going to do is remind us that the biblical perspective is that the main characters of the Bible relied on God for their strength, not their own efforts. People had struggles, people had issues, but people relied on God. God gave them the strength they needed. You think of like the biblical heavyweights, and you think, well, they can't have had any issues, they can't have any problems. But they all pointed to God for their strength. So if we're struggling with life, the universe and everything, and feel that we're inadequate under our own strength, we're in good company. And we need to remember that God is with us, and we can call on his strength and assurance to get us through. I'd like to start off with a key scripture today. It's Philippians 4, verse 13. Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. And I like the contemporary English version, which says, Christ gives me the strength to face anything. So what we're talking about today is God's strength that we need. When we think of strength, I automatically think about lifting weights. And over the summer, we saw the Olympics and the Paralympics, where you had people doing great feats of strength and endurance. Is this what Paul was talking about? Let's think, first of all, what kinds of strength are there? Well, physical strength is what comes to mind. The ability to lift tremendous weights or pull lorries, like the world's strongest man. Remember Jeff Capes and all them? I don't know who's in the best nowadays, but as a kid, I always remember Christmas time. Is it Boxing Day or whatever, they had the world's strongest man on, and people sort of chucking barrels and big stones and dragging trucks and all the rest of it. So you think of that as physical strength. But when you think of something like the Olympics, this is only part of the story. Most sports also require mental and emotional strength. For example, long distance running, they would have to have the mental stamina to push to the end of the race and not give up. And the body can cope with tremendous amounts of stress if you're strong mentally, to be able to fix your focus on the goal. Linked to this, there's also emotional strength. And you see that athletes have the determination to succeed. And that's emotional. If they saw that the race was not being run very well or that things were going horribly wrong, athletes don't just give in and stop. They keep going. And that takes mental and emotional strength. Remember John McEnroe, the tennis player, years ago? Well, he was a bit more volatile. He used to lose his temper and shout, you cannot be serious, and chuck his racket around. And he would react in an emotional way rather than just concentrating on his game. And it's easy and natural to react emotionally and say, it's not fair. And this is not a criticism if you're like this, because we're human. We have emotions. We act on an emotional level. And that's okay. Well, the Bible uses the analogy of running a race and enduring to the end. And in sport, we have a combination of physical, mental, and emotional strength. As well, of course, as the ability to play the game. You have to be able to play football, tennis, whatever. But you also have to have inner strength to be able to succeed. You're probably thinking that I'm not exactly athletic. So what do I know about it? And you'd be right. But I have done some long distance walking. And so I do have some experience of this. Albeit at a more gentle and subdued pace. And Red Bull and painkillers also help. But I wouldn't recommend it, especially if you have a heart condition. So don't take health advice off me on my experience. Don't talk to the doctors, right? Anyway, energy drinks and painkillers aside, I was amazed at what was achievable when you push yourself. And it does take that mental and emotional strength, as well as the physical ability to walk and the stamina. So just imagine what's achievable when you walk in God's strength. Okay, so I want to give you some examples today where great feats were carried out, but not through people's personal strength, but through God who strengthened them. The first example that comes to mind, I guess this is speaking the obvious really, is Samson when you're talking about strength. He's an example of somebody who had extraordinary physical strength. But we see that he also had other weaknesses. Please turn with me to the book of Judges. If you read from chapter 13 onwards, which I don't propose to do today, I'm sure you all know the story. As you read through the story, you read that Samson really wasn't what we would call an upstanding citizen. He was a bit of a womanizing, violent nutter, really, in today's language. But God used him. And on several occasions, it says that the Spirit of God rested upon him. And he was able to do great feats of strength. Like, he killed 1,000 people at one point, and he used the jawbone to kill the lion and things. And we see that at the end of the story that he'd being the leader of the Israelites for 20 years whilst they were being ruled by the Philistines. So, you know the story of Samson and Delilah. She was charged with finding out his secret. And let's have a look in chapter 16. It's quite a funny story, really. It's one of these things that, if you wrote the story now, people would think it's a fairy tale. And it's quite amusing. You see that Delilah was charged with finding out his secret. And you see that he kept on telling her the wrong things just to see if she'd do it. You'd think that he would actually learn that if he, if he said something to her, that she would actually go ahead and do it. And you'd think that he'd stop winding her up, really. There we are. Anyway, let's look at chapter 16, verses 15 to 16. Then she said to him, "How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This was the third time that you have made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your strength." So if you see, this is going on, so this is the third time. Right? Verse 16. With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. So you can just imagine the scene that sort of kept nagging. What's the secret? What's the secret? And he must have been pretty stupid to keep telling her the wrong things and just to test. You must have known that the Philistines were going to give it a go. And you get the feeling that he was just winding them up for sport, really, to see how much he could push them into doing the wrong things. And of course, he would then get free, and then they would all be disappointed. But eventually, he was worn down, and he told her that he was a Nazarite, and that his hair was the secret. So, you know the story, they shaved his head and he lost his power. And then it goes on to say that they he goes his eyes out and they sort of got him in prison doing, you know, growing corn and all sorts of things. That's not really the point. But then we see that he asks God for one last show of strength. Let's pick up the story in verses 27 to 30 in Judges 16. Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there. And on the roof there were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. So you see that in this particular occasion, all the leaders were all in one place. It would be the case of, I suppose, a bit of a Guy Fawkes moment, really, trying to wipe out the whole of the establishment in one go. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, it's verse 28. Sovereign Lord, remember me? Please, God, strengthen me just once more, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes. Then Samson reached towards the two central pillars on which the temple stood. Bracing himself against them, his right hand on one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple and the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. So we see that his strength was from God. He asked for one more show of strength, one last time to destroy the Philistines. On his own, he was nothing. He was just a man. He was like us. He had his weaknesses. But when God and his spirit was upon him, he was able to show great strength. Well, this is an extreme example of God giving someone physical strength in adversity. And what's it for? It was to fulfill his purpose. Notice he didn't save his life or give him sort of health and wealth. He didn't have his eyesight restored. God gave him the strength to fulfill his purpose, which was to destroy the enemy leadership. He gave him the strength so that he would become a sacrifice. But what about others who are not quite as extreme as Samson? Well, as I said at the start, we know that the biblical heavyweights all looked to God for their strength, and they praised him for that. Let's have a look, first of all, at Moses and the Israelites. And that's in Exodus, end of 14 and chapter 15. So let's have a look at just to summarize the context. After Israel had crossed the Red Sea, they sang praises to God. So let's have a look at the end of chapter 14. This is verse 31. When the Israelites saw the great power of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. So in Exodus 15, we'll read verses 1 and 2. Then Moses and the Israelites sang this song to the Lord. I will sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. Both the horse and the driver he has hurled into the sea. Verse 2, this is the point. The Lord is my strength and my defence. He has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise him. My father's God, and I will exalt him. And then he goes on to talk about the chariots and everybody being killed. So we see that Moses and the Israelites look to God for their strength. And it goes on to praise God for drowning the Egyptians and so forth. Then let's have a look at verse 13. It says, verse 13. In your unfailing love you will lead your people that you have redeemed. In your strength you will guide them to your holy dwelling. In your strength he will guide them. He was looking to God for the strength. So Moses wasn't sort of saying that he was guiding them through his strength. He was deferring to God and God's strength. Israel needed God's strength, and they needed a miracle at this point. They forget that they'd been in captivity for a few 100 years. So they only had tales of their ancestors rather than direct experience and relationship with God. Until, of course, Moses showed up and said that he was going to liberate them. And in my opinion, the plagues and all that had happened in that story were as much, or if not more, about giving the Israelites confidence in God and God's strength than it was to show the Pharaoh that God was most powerful than him. Because it says in Exodus 7, 13 to 14, I won't read that, that it said that God hardened the Pharaoh's heart. God could have actually opened the Pharaoh's heart and let them go straight away, but God hardened his heart. And again, it's my opinion that all the plagues and all the rest of it, all the shows, all the miracles were there to give the Israelites some confidence in God's power and God's strength. Then we see that even after all this, that in Exodus 14:11 on the previous page, it says that they'd been murmuring and asking if they brought them out to the desert to die. So Exodus 14:11 says, they said to Moses, "Was it because there was no grave in Egypt that you brought us out to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." So even after all the plagues and everything, they still had question marks. They still had doubts about God's ability and God's strength and God's power. So again, that's why you see the crossing of the Red Sea was a show of strength, a show of power. And it gave them a miracle to give them confidence in the strength of God. And I've noticed that it's often the case today, even today, and that God strengthens those who need it by healing and miracles where it matters the most. And see, quite often we hear about sort of healings and miracles in situations where people don't have the best physical conditions. You know, people out in sort of the third world, you see a lot of people, God shows them his strength by healing. Maybe we get discouraged when you see people with long-term illness and we believe that God can heal, but sometimes perhaps we overthink it and think, well, God can heal, but will he heal? I'm not too sure about that. And sometimes, and I'm talking about myself, and something that's been on my mind lately, perhaps we, in this society, we have everything we need, basically, so perhaps we overthink it and rationalise it away, saying, well, you know, God can if he wants to, but do we actually believe that he will? Perhaps we should go back like little children and just have that faith, have that belief in God and stop thinking about it. At the end of the day, whether prayer is answered right now or not is ultimately up to God. And it depends on his strength and not ours. Like I said, I think we overthink it. It's not up to us. It's not up to our strength. It's up to God anyway. But our job is to ask for it and believe that for God anything is possible. God is capable of doing anything. Okay, let's look at some other examples. King David and the other writers of the Psalms have numerous references to praising God for his strength. And if you look at it in context, again, we're looking at the context of the Israelites here, the physical nation of Israel. And they seem to be continually fighting with somebody, don't they? They seem to be in battles and wars. And you see that God's strength was being displayed in a probably in the more visual form. I haven't got any sort of examples there, but it talks about, in several places, about a small Israelite army going out and flattening a big army from Syria or all the surrounding places. So I guess The show of God's strength was more sort of physical, more tangible back in those days. And you see that reflected in the Psalms. So I'll give you an example. Psalm 46. This is the basis of one of my favourite hymns, which I'll read out at the end. Psalm 46. And the poetry and the words in this is actually inspiring. Like I said, it's in one of the hymns. I think we've done it here before. One of the Dambusters team, which is quite apt, really, when you make it in context. It's quite a short psalm, so I'm going to read this out in full. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way, and the mountains fall and into the heart of the sea. Though its waters roar and foam, and the mountains quake with their surging, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fail. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars to cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. That was in one of the verses of the last hymn, wasn't it? About the shattering the spear and things. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. So I love that. That's sort of, you know, imagine that being sung. That sort of exudes all the confidence and the assurance that God was with them. And like I said, that's sung to the Dambusters team, aptly enough, in one of the hymns. What is evident in the Old Testament is that when they turned their back on God and went forward under their own strength, the Israelites ended up in captivity. So you see that they would have been more dependent on the strength of God in a physical, national sense than perhaps we are today. We think everything's sorted. Perhaps we, and I'm not suggesting that we become poor and destitute and all the rest, but those who are in other societies, other cultures, tend to have, how can I put it, more of a tangible sort of confidence in God, because God sees them through despite everything else. But we need to remember that, and we also need to remember that God and God's strength is what we need to get through day by day. Okay, let's look in Psalms 18. This is another example. Psalm 18, verses 1 to 3. Again, this is the little sort of subheading for the director of music of David, the servant of the Lord. He sang to the Lord the words of this song when the Lord delivered him from the hand of his enemies, from the hand of Saul. He said, I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge. My shield and my horn, and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I called to the Lord, who is worthy of praise, and I have been saved from my enemies. Okay, let's sort of carry on. Let's sort of drop down to verse 31 to 33. For who is God besides the Lord? And who is the rock except O God? It is God who arms me with strength and keeps my way secure. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He causes me to stand on the heights. And it goes on the battles and all the rest again. Again, singing praise to God for his strength. And that passage, 31 to 33, is quoted in 2 Samuel 22, 33, and Habakkuk 3:19. So this was obviously very important to them, to actually give God the glory, give God thanks and praise for his strength. Who is God beside the Lord? Who is our rock except our God? Armed with strength and way secure. So King David set the pattern for praise. And again, this is recorded in 1 Chronicles 16, 7 to 11. Let's have a quick look at that. I suppose it should have been before the last passage, really. But 1 Chronicles 16, 7 to 11. You think of David as being one of the biblical heavyweights, don't we? But who does he rely on? Okay, let's have a look. 2 Chronicles 16, 7 to 11. That day David first appointed Asaph and his associates to give praise to the Lord in this manner. Give praise to the Lord, call on his name, make known among the nations what he has done. Sing to him, sing praise to him. Tell of all his wonderful acts. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Look to the Lord and his strength. Seek his face always. So verse 11, look to the Lord and his strength. So that's the pattern that we see through the Psalms and through the other books that around that time in Israel's history. And notice that he was always pointing to God and God's strength and not his own. Okay, we looked at the physical strength with Samson and the strength in the context of the nation of Israel and King David. Now let's look at it from a different perspective. Please turn to Psalm 73, verse 26. Okay, Psalm 73, and this is a psalm of Asaph. So we just read like the pattern and his instructions back in Chronicles. And this is one of the things he said in verse 26. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Well, our hearts are our core, our inner being. And what he's saying here is that our physical bodies may be weak, but God is our strength. He is the strength of our heart, our inner being. So when you think of doing something from the heart, again, that's when you think of emotional strength and mental strength when we go through things. If you do something with heart, it's the passion. God is our strength. God is our passion. And in the New Testament, Paul says something similar in 2 Corinthians. It's about his physical weaknesses. Okay, 2 Corinthians 12. Let's start halfway through verse 7. Okay, verse 7 starts off halfway through a sentence. Drop into the first proper one. It says, therefore, in order to keep me from being conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So again, from the Old and New Testament, we see that physically we may be weak, but in our weakness, we see God's strength coming through. People speculate what the thorn in the flesh was, but it doesn't actually say. But whatever it was bothered him long term. But he says that his weaknesses showed how strong God was. Notice he pleaded three times, and God's reaction was that his grace was sufficient. God was with him all the way, and it was God's strength that he relied on in his weakness. So he says that he delighted in his weaknesses so that it would show evermore God's strength. So the question is it okay to be weak? Does God think bad of us if we think that we are inadequate? The answer is no. God does not think bad of us. Christ died for us in our weakness. Let's look at Romans 5. We normally think of verse 8 in Romans 5, which, of course, talks about us, Christ dying for us while we were still sinners. But let's have a look at verse 6. Romans 5, verse 6. You see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, I think the NIV, the King James says, when we're still without strength. Christ died for the ungodly. So, as he said, when we are still powerless, weak, without strength, whatever, Christ died for us. He died for us despite our weaknesses. God doesn't discriminate or look badly on us for our own weaknesses. But he says, when we're still weak, that implies that we're no longer weak because we have the strength of Christ, the strength of God. It goes on in verse 8, what God demonstrates his own love for us in that is, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So we see that despite our human weaknesses, God's love is greater. Christ knows our weaknesses. And he himself went through turmoil before he was killed. Don't forget that Christ was fully God and fully man. He was God in the flesh. He was human. He still is in a glorified form. And even Christ needed strength on the night that he was betrayed. Again, we think of Christ as being, okay, he was also God, therefore he wouldn't have had an issue with it. But this shows... Let's have a look in Luke 22. This shows Christ's humanity coming through to the fore. Luke 22, verses 41 to 44. Okay, this is, again, putting it in context. He was praying on the Mount of Olives. Verse 41. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them and knelt down and prayed. This is what Christ prayed. Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. Verse 43. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. Verse 44. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. So do we have the right to feel bad when we feel stressed and distressed through what we go through? No. Christ himself, it says here, he had anguish. He sweat blood for what was about to happen. This shows us the humanity of Christ. His stress, all the pressure about what was about to happen to him. It says that he was sweating blood. And that's a medical condition in extreme cases of stress. The little blood vessels can sort of burst on the surface of the skin. So this is something which is not something which is totally unheard of. When you think about it, Jesus was about to have the sin of humanity placed upon his shoulders. How much pressure was that? How much strength did he need? And whatever we face in this life, it will not be as huge as what Jesus faced that night. But what does it say? He deferred to the will of God, and an angel appeared and strengthened him. Jesus became human, or the Word became human. He knows what it's like to be a weak human being. He could have said, "It's okay, I'm God, I won't feel the pain," and just blanked it all out. But instead, he sweat blood. As we know, God's will was for Jesus to die, and he did. Jesus deferred to God, or to the Father, and that was his will. And he made the ultimate sacrifice once and for all. But you see, if Jesus even questioned it, but deferred to God's will, and had to rely on God's strength, there's no shame in feeling weak and relying on God's strength and will. Jesus died for us while we were still weak and while we were still sinners. So our salvation does not rely on our strength, but it relied on God's strength. And we see in that case there that Christ overcame his weakness, overcame his anguish, and deferred to the will of God. Okay, so one of the last point. God has not left us alone. His Spirit is in us and among us. And his Spirit gives us the strength to face life's problems. But don't forget, God's Spirit, God's presence is also there to share in life's joy as well. Christ is with us through the good and the bad. Jesus said that he would never leave us or forsake us. And we can rely totally on his strength. We're not talking physical strength here necessarily, but we also need his mental and emotional strength to cope with the stresses of life. And we need to remember this. When life gets us down, and it does, we need to remember that the great characters of the Bible, we just read just a couple of random examples of Moses and David and Paul and Jesus himself, that they all relied on God's strength. They all relied not on their own strength, but they all deferred and praised God and pointed to God as the strength that they needed to do God's will. Jesus has gone through more than we will ever have to, even unto death. And he died with the weight of humanity's sin on his shoulders. And he's even conquered that. He even conquered death. We've learned that from Paul that it's okay to be weak. And that this weakness shows even more the strength of God working through us. So we need to remember this. And we need to trust and rely totally on God. So what I want to do is to finish, in conclusion, is to read again Psalm 46. This time, this is the modern sort of version of it from the hymn. So I think this says it slightly more eloquently than me. It says, "God is our strength and refuge, our present help in trouble, and we therefore will not fear, though the earth should change, though the mountains shake and tremble, though swirling floods are raging. God, the Lord of hosts, is with us evermore. There is a flowing river within God's holy city. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God's help is swiftly given. Thrones vanish at his presence. God, the Lord of hosts, is with us evermore. Come, see the works of our Maker. Learn of his deeds all-powerful. Wars will cease across the world when he shatters the spear. Be still and know your Creator. Uplift him in the nations. God, the Lord of hosts, is with us evermore. So with that, I shall finish. And hopefully that's given you encouragement that no matter what we go through, God is with us. And we rely on his strength and not our own.